the Ohio School of the Air. Men Who Made America. Stories of action, of achievement, of men and women who've contributed to the molding of the nation. Today, the Dean Without a College.
The story of William Dean Howells. This week, America celebrates the 100th anniversary of the birth of William Dean Howells, the Dean of American Letters. Ohio joins in this anniversary with maternal pride, for he was her native son. As a boy, he knew and loved the broad-breasted Ohio at Martin's Ferry and later at Cincinnati, for he lived in nearby Hamilton. At Xenia, he lived a pioneer life in a log cabin. At Dayton and at Ashtabula on Lake Erie, he learned his trade as printer. At Ohio's capital, he first tried his literary wings on the Ohio State Journal. Here he saw Lincoln, thrilled to the dramatic scenes as war clouds hovered. Here he saw Ohio's new state house dedicated. Here published his first book of poems and received his first acceptance from Atlantic Monthly, which he was one day to edit. So Ohio pays tribute to the Ohioan whose delicate, charming writings have delighted readers for three quarters of a century. His is the supreme artistry that makes every reader his intimate friend. Friends are not easily forgotten, and though William Dean Howells died almost 17 years ago, we can still see his round face, his kindly beaming eyes, and his genial smile half hidden under his snowy, brush-like mustache. It is easy to imagine him grunting as his great bulk sags into his easy chair. Fumbling with his watch chain, we recall his voice, deep, rich, and a little husky.
Well, so you want to hear the story of my life, Well, it won't be very exciting fare, I'm afraid. You know, I always intended to write an autobiography. But somehow, well, there were so many more interesting things to write about. But since you've asked, well, I was born in Martin's Ferry. That's on the Ohio River, you know, across from Wheeling, on the first day of March, 1837. But it wasn't long before we moved down near Cincinnati to Hamilton, where my father had a newspaper. I told all about that in a boy's town. There was a real boys' town, if there ever was one. Skating, sledding, swimming, hunting. Yes, a boys' paradise. Yes, and how I loved the smell of printer's ink, the grind of the presses. Even when I was a little shaver, I used to set type, though I was so small that I had to stand on a chair to reach the type cases.
Well, that's the idea, son. You're getting to be a real fast typesetter.
This is fun, Dad. I like to set type.
You've almost finished that stick, haven't you? Now, let's see about mistakes. Shouldn't that be an S instead of an F up there?
No, Dad, that's right.
So it is, my son. There's many a journeyman printer that can't set as clean a galley as this. All done?
Yes, sir.
Well, now you can go on with something else. There's a sale bill there on the hook yonder. Try your hand at that. It's 24 points. That'll be easy for you. I want to pull a proof of this galley you've set.
Well, not the last part, Dad, please.
Why?
Oh, that's just something that I...
Will. Done. What's this? It isn't for the paper, is it?
No, it's a poem.
Who wrote it?
I did.
You wrote this poem, son? Well, let's have a look at it.
It isn't very good.
Oh, we'll see about that. Well, here we are. The wild and leafy forests in the middle of the spring are like a baker's shop that's full of many a pleasant thing. Why, that's pretty good poetry, son.
You think so, really?
Why, it's fine for a starter. You practice a lot and read, and one day you'll be able to write poems in books. Right with the best of them.
Gee, I wish I could.
Have you got number 7 galley over there?
Yes, I just pulled the proof on it.
Here, let me take it, will you? Make it up page 2.
Well, don't take the last part. That's mine.
Yours?
What in blazes?
Don't let him read it.
Here, Tom, let me have that.
Right in poetry. Gonna take him out and drown him, Bill?
Let the boy be, Tom.
Say, Jackrabbit, how do you spell Baker?
Baker? Why, B A I K E R.
That's good. B A I K E R, isn't it? Fine printer you'll make. And a finer poet.
He laughed at my poem, Dad, and I wrote it for you.
Well, journeyman printers are a poor lot. You know that, son. Words are just so many M's and pikas and galleys to them. They don't see the meaning of what they set, nor the soul or beauty back of it. Don't you mind, sonny. We think it's a good poem, and we know.
I hope I can be a good writer someday, so even printers will like what I write.
So you want to be a writer, huh? Well, I'm glad, son. I reckon there's only one thing finer in making books, and that's writing them. I'm glad, sonny. That's what we'll aim for.
Yes, the desire to write was born in me that day, and it's been gnawing at me ever since. I worked in my father's printing shop during my teens, writing, setting type, running the press. But finally, the chance came, really to begin my literary career. I was offered a position in Columbus with the Ohio State Journal. Those days in the state capital were the happiest of my life, I think. I loved my work, and besides reporting for the newspaper, I wrote several poems that made their way into the Atlantic Monthly. The satisfaction of being admitted to that literary holy of holies would have been sufficient reward had I not been paid. Their payment seems overgenerous, because I have to thank them besides for bringing me the girl who was one day to be mine.
Having a good time, Elnie?
Oh, delightful, Cousin Laura. Imagine being invited to a governor's ball on the very night of my arrival.
You should be here for the governor's winter ball. Governor Chase loves parties and young people.
And all the way from Vermont, I was feeling sorry for myself coming out to this wild and woolly west. And now to find this.
We're not so uncivilized as you might think. Ohio's quite grown up now. Iowa and Nebraska Territory are the new frontier.
Well, of course, dear. But you know how we Easterners are. Why, I couldn't convince Father that there was any culture outside New England.
And we don't think of ourselves as Westerners at all.
Oh, look, Laura. There's a copy of the Atlantic Monthly.
Yes, of course. Why?
Oh, but I never dreamed that anyone in Ohio subscribed to the Atlantic. Why, it's very distinguished and literary.
Oh, we have several contributors to the Atlantic in Columbus.
You have?
Really? Of course. One of them is here this evening. He's one of the young men on the Journal and quite a favorite of Governor Chase.
Do you know him?
Very well. His name is Howell. Will Howell.
William Dean Howell? Well, I've read his poems. Doesn't he write beautifully?
We think so in Columbus.
Oh, I should like to meet him, Laura.
That's easy, if I can just catch his eye.
Well, is he difficult to talk with?
Oh, very. I'm afraid you...
Oh, I know. Literary people can be so reserved.
It isn't that silly. Will Howells is the shyest man in Columbus. Oh, now he's looking. Hello, Will.
Oh, well, hello, Laura.
Come over. I want to present you to my cousin. Eleanor, may I present Mr. Howell? My cousin, Miss Eleanor Mead.
I'm very pleased to know you, Miss Mead.
Oh, I'm so pleased, Mr. Howell.
Eleanor just arrived today from Brattleboro, Vermont, to visit us for a month. She hasn't seen an Indian yet, and is so relieved that we haven't had a massacre since last fall.
Oh, Laura.
Here you are, Laura.
This is my dance.
Oh, hello, Fred. You two will excuse me, I promise you, sir.
Well, do you enjoy dancing, Mr. Howell?
Yes, sometimes. But I'm afraid I dance kind of jumpy.
Oh, you're too modest, Mr. Howells.
It would be so much nicer to just talk. There's nobody in this little reception room. Do you mind?
Why, not at all, Mr. Howells. I'd love just to talk with you. Nora was telling me that you contribute to the Atlantic. I was so thrilled.
Yes, I've had a couple of things in North American Review, too.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how splendid. You know, I met Mr. Lowell last summer when he came to Brattleboro.
Oh?
Don't you think he's charming?
Well, I've never met him, but he's asked me to call on him when I come to Boston.
Oh, are you coming east?
Sometime, I hope.
Oh, then you must come to Brattleboro. It's not terribly far from Boston. Did you go to Harvard?
No, I've never been east.
Oh, and I always imagined you a very scholarly Boston professor.
Instead of a newspaper man in the wilds of Ohio, hmm?
Well, I guess your Ohio colleges are very good, too.
Well, I read law a little while and tried to study medicine, but, well, I never really went to college.
But you write so beautifully.
Oh, I sort of picked it up, I guess. You see, I always tried to write and read a lot, too, and...
You mean you've taught yourself?
Oh, yes, mostly.
Oh, I think poetry is much nicer than dancing. Poetry is so alive and necessary.
Yes. Yes, that's how I feel about it, too.
I loved your poem in the Atlantic. You know, the one that goes, I wonder and think of the village and the house in the maple gloom and the porch with the honeysuckles and the sweetbriar all abloom.
And this line from the same poem, a wish to think with what passion at parting she gave me my kisses again. Do you remember?
Yes, Will. Dear adieu, and tears and caresses.
Eleanor.
Yes, a long time ago. Well, Miss Mead and I saw each other frequently, and before long... Well, that's another story. When I learned that Atlantic had accepted the pilot story, my long poem on slavery, I thought I might afford a trip to Boston. I was anxious to accept Mr. Lowell's invitation. And that invitation to Brattleboro may have something to do with it, too. When the great Mr. Lowell gave a dinner for me at the famous Parker House, my joy was complete.
My young friend, you're right on time.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lowell. I wouldn't be late on this day of days.
My other guests aren't so prompt, but then literary dinners are no novelty to Holmes and Fields.
Oh, is Dr. Holmes to be here? Mr. Fields? Oh, you're much too kind.
Not at all, my boy. You see, mine is the pride of discovery. After all, we were the first to print your work.
Yes, and I shall never be able to, thank you.
Well, that's how we editors make our reputations. Finding young ones like you to push us off the map.
I see.
Here we are, Oliver. Hello, James. I met Oliver on the stairs.
Oh, come in, James. How are you, Oliver? This is my young Ohio friend about whom we've all been so curious. This is Dr. Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Oh, how do you do, sir?
And James, let me present our contributor, Will Howells.
How do you do?
Mr. James Fields, publisher of The Atlantic.
Yeah.
These new writers come along faster than an oldster like me can keep up with them.
Well, I see we're served. Shall we sit down, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Ah. You sit there, Oliver. Howells, you're the guest of honor, and you, James.
Oysters, sir.
No, thank you. Just a cup of soup. And no wine, please.
Oh, here, Oliver. Now, none of that. Not so autocratic, sir. This is a dinner. Not a breakfast table.
Very well, then. I think I will take oysters.
Well, that's better. I always have to keep reminding Oliver to remember the dinner bell.
Well, what does Mr. Lowell mean by that?
That's a standing joke of theirs. When our friend Holmes waxes too ecstatic over transcendentalism and things of the spirit, Lowell always reminds him that man must eat to live.
And that while it's all very well to have one's head in the clouds, it's...
It's very satisfying to fortify oneself with...
Must be sad.
That's it. To fortify oneself with roast beef. You see anything of Longfellow these days, James?
Not for ages.
He's sitting ahead.
Writing?
No, not a line.
Where's Whit here?
Still wrapped up in the abolitionist movement. Comes in from Amesbury now and then to speak.
What are they reading in Ohio these days, Howells?
Why, I suppose Marble Fawn has sold more than any book since Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Hawthorne told me it had gone very well.
Oh, is Hawthorne back?
Came back on the same boat with me last week.
Gentlemen, shall I serve your coffee in the parlor?
Cigar, Howells?
No, thank you, sir.
Well, I guess I'm the only sinner in the party. I know you and James don't, Oliver. Shall we go in, gentlemen?
Yes,
whom have you met since you've been in Boston, Howells? Longfellow? Hawthorne? Whittier?
No one, sir, except you and Mr. Fields and Mr. Lowell. I should like to meet Mr. Hawthorne, though.
Meet Hawthorne? I don't know that you'll ever feel that you've really met him. He's like a dim room with a little taper of personality burning on the corner of the mantel.
Gentlemen, I think I must be going on. I'm a businessman with an office to look after, you know.
So must I, fear. Thank you, James. I've enjoyed answering your dinner bell and meeting our young friend here. Now, if you're free tomorrow, Howells...
He's coming to breakfast with me and to the Atlantic office.
You come to tea with me then, Mr. Howells. I'll give you a note to Mr. Hawthorne.
Oh, that would be wonderful, Mr. Holmes.
Goodbye, James, and thank you again. It's been something like the apostolic succession, hasn't it? This laying on of hands on this new generation from out the West.
But the succession didn't succeed so well back in Columbus, and I despaired that I should ever support myself by writing. When Lincoln's secretary, John Hay, suggested that he could secure me a consulship abroad, well, I rushed to Washington and to the White House.
Will, any news, John?
Good news. I've got it.
Signed?
The ink's still wet.
Let me see. Proposing special confidence in the abilities and integrity, consul for Venice, and the ports of the Lombardy Venetian Kingdom. John, how will I ever thank you?
Oh, that's all right, Will. He was glad to do it when I explained it was you who'd written the campaign volume.
Oh, John.
Matter of fact, he was impressed that he wanted to see you.
Really?
Well, he seemed to feel sort of sheepish about it, though. He didn't want any of us to know.
I think he's on his way out now. Look, I'll duck around the corner and wait. And you stay here.
All right.
I'll be back. Now you wait for me. Speak to him?
Well, yes, I saw him, but I couldn't.
You didn't speak to him? Oh, but he came out on purpose.
Yes, I couldn't. I wanted to thank him, and then I decided that everyone who forbore to speak needlessly to him or to shake his hand did him a kindness. He walked over to the water cooler in the corner and drew himself a full goblet from it. Then he went wearily back through the doors.
Oh, but Will, not to speak to Lincoln.
No, John, I wish that I could be as sure of the wisdom of every action for the rest of my life as I'm sure of the rightness of this. I would rather have seen Lincoln in that unconscious moment, to have paid my homage in silence.
Yes, then the days in Venice. They were a succession of delights, chiefly by reason of my marriage in Paris on the day before Christmas, 1862, to the young lady from Brattleboro who thought well of my writing and who continued to do so for almost half a century.
I found time to do a series of Venetian sketches which ran in the Boston Advertiser and later appeared in a book form as Venetian Days. Lowell's approval of them gave me the courage to decide that come what might, my life was to be writing or nothing. So after my return to America, I worked for a short time in New York as a freelance and as a writer on The Nation. But March found me in Boston, ready to begin work as assistant editor of my first love, The Atlantic.
Come in, Howells, come in. Just get it?
Yes, yesterday. Well, I feared we should never make it.
A blizzard?
Yes, it seemed that the train would surely stall and we should be snowbound.
Hmm, as bad as that, huh?
Yes, and such a coincidence. I was reading Whittier's poem, Snowbound. Have you read it?
Oh, yes. Like it?
Oh, very much. I've always admired Whittier. I think he's unexcelled in some of his pictorial moods. The sun, that brief December day, rose cheerless over hills of gray and darkly circled, gave at noon a sadder light than waning moon. Vivid, don't you think? But, sir, don't you like it?
Very much. I was merely being amused at another coincidence.
Another coincidence? About Snowbound?
Exactly. You see, Whittier is waiting to see me. Come along.
Whittier? Here?
Now, come, Howells. You'll have to get over this awe with which you regard these very ordinary mortals who write for us. You'll soon be setting the prices we pay for their outpourings. Don't get the notion they're all gods from Olympus or we'll be printing the Atlantic in red ink. Come. Whittier, this is my young associate of whom I have told you. Mr. John Greenleaf Whittier, Mr. William Dean Howells.
How do you, young man? I'm very honored to meet you, sir.
Now, if you two men of letters will excuse me, you see, I'm just an ordinary publisher with bills to pay and everything.
Mm-hmm. Of course, James. I'll have a chat with the young editor and then we'll go to dinner, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how pleased and honored I am at meeting you, Mr. Whittier. I think I've read everything you've written. I remember the first time I came to Boston asking Mr. Lowell and Mr. Holmes about you, hoping they might give me a note to you, and as they had to Mr. Hawthorne. But they spoke vaguely about you living in Amesbury, and, well, in my innocence and ignorance of New England geography, I imagined it far away. You see, I couldn't imagine that any more great men could possibly live around Boston.
What part of the world do you hail from, young man?
Ohio, sir. Though I've been away from there a good while. Father used to send me your poems while I was in Europe.
Your father?
Yes, sir. You see, he was a Quaker, too, like yourself. We were brought up with great respect for the Society of Friends.
I see. Then we have something in common, haven't we?
Tell me, Mr. Whittier. You were so outspoken, did so much to help erase the injustices of slavery. How do you feel of conditions akin to slavery in New England, throughout the North?
Slavery? New England?
Yes, wage slavery. The slavery of mill owners whose low wages enforce a bondage more cruel than the South ever saw.
I see no similarity, Mr. Howells. Capital must buy labor at market prices.
And what was slavery but that?
Well, perhaps you're right. I'm a very old man now, and I'm tired. I have spoken all I shall probably ever have to say. Few men last over from one reform to another. The task, if there be one, is yours. Yours and those who come after you.
And so began a half century of association with the greatest minds, the most lovable personalities of their age. 50 years of joy and work, happiness and achievement, and of sorrow, too, for once and again, and yet again and again, the black shadow that never shall be lifted, has fallen. Yet it has not been possible to compress all the richness of 83 years into as many volumes, fat and thin. Records of friendships such as...
Fellow.
Rainer. Edward Hale.
Breeze, there a man with soul so dear.
Henry James. Thomas Nelson Page.
Norton.
Comrade of all, the Lincoln of literature, Mark Twain. All gone. All passes. Art alone endures. Their rich legacies are your heritage.
This has been the fifth of a new series, Men Who Made America, prepared for the schools of the nation by the Ohio School of the Air and presented as an NBC educational feature. The Dean Without a College is an original radio drama by Meredith Page, prepared by the radio workshops of the State Department of Education and Ohio State University under the direction of Mr. Page. It was produced by the Crosley Players under the direction of Reichel Kent. This is Joseph Reese, inviting you to listen next week at the same hour to Sun Magic.